Our subject today is electromagnetic fields, its effect on ormus, its effect on our experience. And the reason I got Melanie on this call this morning is she's got the most amazing stories about the... because Melanie's a complete newbie to the whole ormus community and to EMFs as a subject. She had no idea that EMFs even existed until she started taking ormus. We'll get her to tell her story in a bit. But first, Joe Lello's been doing some extraordinary amounts of research into this whole subject because Joe has got a significant background in electronics for the last 30 years, and I don't think there's anyone in this ormus forum more qualified to talk about EMFs as a subject as is Joe Lello. So, Joe, why don't you kick off the call and tell us your background, your research, and what you've come up with, and maybe talk a touch about what compelled you to go down the thought, go down the emotional, the logical track in your own mind, and therefore your procedures, that you would go to lengths to protect your ormus once you've made it. Why don't you go down that track first so you can bring us the whole room up to speed with that whole subject before we hear from Melanie.
Okay. Good afternoon, everybody. First of all, it's probably a good number you already know who I am, but I don't have any fancy framed degree or anything to prove that I sat around in some classroom for 4 years, bored out of my skull, not paying attention and then paying somebody for the final exam. I have learned what I have learned from over 40 years of practical experience. I've been employed in electric motor rewinding and electronics, radio, computer, every aspect that you can imagine for a very long time. And built my first radio transmitter at age 12, back when we still used tubes, if anybody can remember those. So I do pretty much have some experience with electronics. First of all, I don't know if everybody realizes this is a very impromptu thing that we're doing here. The original speaker had a problem, a very legitimate problem at the last minute, so we kind of just had to put this together in a hurry. It's not like I had a real adamant position about this, but since Dennis, who goes out of his way to do this for us, asked me to, I decided to step in here, and I had just spoken with Melanie about what she's going to tell us about, and just found it absolutely fascinating. I'm sure you will, too. I don't know that I've ever come out and actually said that I definitely believe that ormus is affected one way or the other by EMF, but I follow the idea, well, that's not the word I'm looking for at any rate, why take a chance? There are methods for shielding things if it's affected. Why not to take some steps to protect it? First of all, we have no method for measuring ormus's strength, existence, or anything else other than subjective opinion. So people that are jumping up and down saying, I've tested my ormus, I've tortured it and twisted it and thrown it around and put magnets in it and whipped it and everything else, and it's still fine. Let's face it, guys. I mean, you know, they've given a spoonful to somebody. Yes, it's good. They tortured it, and yes, it's still good. That proves very little to me, okay? It's subjective. So I really don't put any stock in that. Whether or not it's affected negatively, I don't know. Can't prove, but I do know some reasonable methods for protecting it that can be done very easily and cheaply, which I got from chiefly from a site by a man by the name of Alexander Spielman. I don't know if any of you have ever heard of him. He's a fascinating individual. He's a Russian physicist. He's the guy that came up with the axion spin field generator, which is something that is just amazing. He can take any substance and literally pass a beam of tachyons or axions, whatever he calls them, through the substance into water, and the water then takes on the characteristics of that substance. So you could, for example, take an aspirin, shine this thing through the aspirin into water, and now you have a glass of aspirin. Something that would probably shake Big Pharma to the roots if they could know about this. And the applications and permutations of it are mind-boggling. But Mr. Spielman had for quite a while some information on his site about protecting M-State, which is how he refers to it. I went back there just last night, and unfortunately the particular page that I referred to is gone. But the good news is he has some new material up there, which is very interesting. he's got some new methods of protection, and he has a suggested method for magnetically boosting the charge of Ormus, which I was very pleasantly surprised to run across that. And for any of you who are interested, I will give you the site, and it is a long one. So I'll wait a minute and give you all a minute to get some pencils and papers ready.
Thank you.
And he's a very interesting individual. Here goes the voice, Dennis. Excuse me. It's www.pmicro, P like Papa, micro, M-I-C-R-O, dot K-Z, Kilo Zulu, / UFL, as in the University of Florida, / all capital letters Almanac, spelled A-L-M-A-N-A-C-H. And we're almost done. / 3, a lowercase n like Nancy, 00. And finally, / protection a dot htm. I don't know if I put 2 forward slashes in there. There's only supposed to be one. I'll go over that again.
Charles, would you please be willing to post that onto the web? Because that's
That may be a better idea.
Yeah.
Okay. In fact, there's a little shorter form. I'll give it out one more time, and then we'll move on. www.pmicro.kz/, and see here I already left out one character. There's a tilde there, that little wiggly line, which is to the left of your one. Tilde, UFL, / almanac with an H at the end of it.
Too hard.
Yeah, too hard. We'll skip it. I'll put a post up about it. Anyway. Moving right along. Where am I? Where were we? Melanie called me up. Actually, Dennis called me up and put me in touch with Melanie the other day, who indicated that she had had an amazing problem. We knew about this through the many posts, but I hadn't heard all of the details, where she had gotten together with Sikh Verda, who most of us know on the list. And I'll let her go into detail about that, but... basically, that's it. I just wanted to be around here to be backup in case we have any questions regarding EMF and so forth, but I'll let her explain that. As far as my method of shielding, it's very, very simple. You can get yourself some aluminum foil, some plastic sheeting, different types will serve. You want it to be fairly flexible because you have to be able to roll it up. So I use just like Saran Wrap, not name brand. It's a different brand, but a plastic film. A piece of a plastic bag would work fine. And the last item is ordinary paper. A piece of copy paper out of your printer will work fine. And what you do is you make two sandwiches. Lay down a piece of aluminum foil the size of a piece of paper in front of you. Rip off a piece of Saran Wrap the size of that piece of paper and place the piece of paper on top of it. And you do that twice and make two layers of that. And you take your bottle or container or whatever and you just simply start at one end and roll it up like a taco inside there. Roll it up, twist both ends to keep it tight, put a rubber band around it, whatever you want to do. And what you have done is formed something, anyone that's familiar with electronics is very, very analogous to a capacitor. That's not really how it works. It's more of an argon concentrator type thing. And that's what I have found to be very, very effective. I have also at times used aluminum foil and wax paper, and aluminum foil and wax paper. Entering into this picture, realize you have the plastic of the bottle and the card come into the picture, so you actually make the shipping container into a huge argon, not concentrator or storage vessel. It works. I've heard from many people that they've done dousing and so forth, and it arrives at 99 or better percent of what it left. And if you can do something that effective, that simply, why not? If it's not really doing anything, what have you lost? A couple of pieces of tinfoil. So I think it's well worth doing. As far as in your home, what I've always done is I have a cabinet. A wooden cabinet, and inside, I've done the exact Same thing, only lining all the inner surfaces with a layer sprayed adhesive. On the adhesive, put some tin foil, a plastic. For that application, I use report covers because it's a little stiffer. Excuse me, since you don't have to roll it up. And here goes the voice, Dennis. And a sheet of paper or cardboard, either one. And you put two layers of that on all surfaces and inside the door. And there you have a little armor safe put together. And, of course, it should be located away from, as far as possible, away from your electrical wiring and your huge 8-foot-high boombox stereo speakers and so forth. People will say that it's not damaged by magnetism or anything. We know definitely it tries to get away from magnetism. Electromagnetic fields, if they're not magnetic already, instill magnetism in ferrous objects, and you are going to attempt to push the ormus either out of a loose cap or straight through the wall of the container if it wants to get away bad enough, if it gets around any intense magnetic fields. This doesn't provide the best protection in the world, but you know, nobody really knows yet what is. Seems to work fairly effectively.
You know, one thing that always boggled my mind, Joe, and that is that people don't understand this whole electromagnetic field thing. They got to know, if they're in the ormus community for very long, that one of the ways of making ormus is to pour water through a magnetic field, and all the water that's got ormus in it will not go through those magnets. It'll jump off to anywhere it can go, and they have a little tap that goes off to the side that connects collects the ormus water, and the water that doesn't have ormus in it goes through the magnets, and the water that does have ormus in it jumps out to the side. It literally pretty much levitates to get away from those magnets. Does that not indicate that the ormus does not want to go through the magnetic field, is disturbed by it, and is trying to get away from it?
Well, the best analogy that I've ever heard, the one that I like the best, we brought up the subject of magnetic charging. Ron and I were talking about that, and I don't remember who came up with it, but someone suggested that when you run it, you know, you're saying that it doesn't like magnetic fields and that this is potentially harmful, yet when you go to charge it, you run it through a magnetic device. Indeed, that's what Alexander Spielman has you doing, a very specialized, shaped magnet. But still, Ron's method was running it through a core of a stack of donut magnets through what's known as the block wall area of the magnet structure. Alexander's method, again, uses cylindrical, actually looks like a cavity resonator, what he's designed there, with tubing running through it. You'll have to see it to understand it. And what someone came up with is not so much attacking it as tickling. Somebody comes up and tickles you. They're not really hurting you. They're not really damaging you, but, you know, you freak out and you want to get away from it. You want them to stop. And that's pretty much what you're doing to the ormus. You're tickling the ormus with this magnetic field, and it wants to get away from that tickling. And as you tickle it, it gets more worked up and more excited, and that's basically what the charging of it is about. You're getting this thing all hot and bothered. And that's how the magnetic charge works. And I found that to be an extraordinarily understandable way to visualize what you're doing here with the magnetism, not so much that it's blatant harm, but it's trying to get away, and it does definitely affect it. And as Dennis says, if you've got some strong field, try to get away from it always. It can levitate on it. It can be forced out of a container. That's how the magnetic trap works. In the world that we live in now, you can't, as they say, swing a dead cat without seeing a cell phone tower. They're everywhere. They're beaming out microwaves. People have microwave ovens. Contrary to what some people would have you believe, your computer is generating massive amounts of RF. You can set a police scanner next to your computer, turn it on, and it will lock frequency every 15 kilohertz up the band because the CPU is putting out radio waves. From one end of the spectrum to the other, that scanner will lock on every channel, or darn near every channel, simply because it's not responding fast enough to catch it. You have studio transmitter links, you have airplane radar, you have police radar, you have so many sources of EMF it would take me the rest of our afternoon to describe them. Each one of these are capable of instilling in any ferrous object a magnetic field. It is around us like the ocean, Doctors are starting to become more and more aware of this, like the article that Barry posted not long ago, especially on infants, about cell phone exposure. And it's a concern for us as well. We have a question as to how this affects the material once it's in our body. We just positively don't know. So it's wise to stay away from it. And when Melanie tells you how it affects it when it's in her body, you're really going to be pretty surprised. Anything else you want me to cover before we let Melanie go?
Most of the people who are researched in this area at all will have seen the demonstration when they put cell phones or mobile phones next to each other and an egg in between, and 2 minutes of conversation between these two phones will cook that. I think 10 minutes will cook the egg. Not 2 minutes, but 10 minutes will actually cook that egg. Just if it's sat, you know, in the space between two cell phones communicating with each other.
The original story was
it cooks the
minutes.
Egg.
Dennis, what was that, Barry?
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
So, the original story was 90 minutes. It's one of those stories that has not been confirmed and has been bunked on some of the debunked websites and so on. But,
yeah, more accurate I've heard is one half a degree per minute of exposure is the rate of temperature increase in the human brain when you're holding a cell phone. I believe that was an accurate test, one half a degree. I don't know that that continues forever, but it will cause local heating. Obviously, it's a microwave, and we know that microwave ovens work. How long it would take to cook an egg, I don't know. At 100 milliwatts, I think it wouldn't have enough power to do any cooking, but it could definitely have cellular effects. One thing that disturbs me, are you trying to say something, Dennis?
If you don't believe that thing about microwaves, go to the microwave tower where they have.
But the tower is a big difference between the tower and the handset, though. Understand, the tower is putting out massive amounts of energy. Your cell phone, typically, if it's a new one, is 100 milliwatts, which is a tenth of a watt, or maybe even less. The old phones, the lunch boxes we used to carry around, now that was 25, 35 watts. You're talking some serious cooking there. Still nothing compared to them. Your average microwave oven is 100 watts or better. Some of them are 1,000. So, it's a considerable difference in power level.
Microwave tower, it will cook your brain in minutes.
Mm.
That's why they have these warning signs, and they put those microwave towers in a place where you can never stand in front of them. That's why they have them really high up, where no one can actually stand, because they'll be dead in moments.
Well, this ought to drive it home to you. I understand there's a position in the military, I don't know what it's called, on an aircraft carrier where a soldier, a Navy a sailor, has to go up and sweep the dead seagulls out from in front of the radar antenna every morning or every shift, because they have become cooked sitting in front of the radar antenna. So that should tell you. One of the things that amazes me in this area is that, any company at all is profit-driven in this world. God knows. They're profit-driven to the point of not caring about human beings and cutting them off 1 year before retirement and all of the shenanigans that they pull to get away from paying people and making more and more profit. If you have a radio transmitter, it's a basic principle of electronics. The higher the frequency, the smaller the antenna. If you walk into any Kmart or Walmart or whatever, you can pick up a phone for your home. It operates at 2.4 gigahertz, yet cell phones are still 850 megahertz, roughly. They move all around in that area. If you were to have to be the person responsible for constructing an antenna array for a cell phone use, in other words, 8 antennas on top of each other, and then there's a number of these arrays pointing in different directions of the compass, so you're looking at, 32 or 64 antennas or whatever's up there. Each one of those has to be a certain size according to the frequency. Now, if they were to increase that frequency, for example, 2.4 gigahertz, the resonant length is an inch compared to 2 or 3 inches at 800 meg. If they were to go up to 10 gigahertz, it would be a quarter of an inch. That entire cell tower assembly, instead of being the size of this huge conglomerate that we see, could be fit inside a basketball. why would they stay with this frequency? And the only disturbing conclusion I have come to is that it's a scientific fact that the most effective frequency for penetrating the human skull is in the neighborhood of 800 to 900 megahertz. So I'm not going to take that any further. You let your imagination be your guide as to what they may be doing with that, but that's a fact.
If I was to speculate on that, I would speculate that you're saying this is a deliberate strategy for some purpose that isn't particularly helpful and healthy.
That would certainly be the outward appearance of it.
Either that or that's where the technology locks them in.
I don't, you know, in the high-tech, advancement happens on a daily basis. And if it's going to save them money, I mean, we went from analog to digital. They had to change all the equipment then. It would be no reason they could have gone to 10, 20, 50 gigahertz.
Unity, when everything changes, means everyone else gets to make new equipment and make lots of extra money.
Exactly.
The reason for
like
it.
Anything else, planned obsolescence.
Yeah.
I just replaced my antenna on my roof this morning, and I had a very large FM antenna, which unfortunately was too big.
Speak up, Barry.
My FM antenna was too big, and it crashed to the ground and I broke it. FM antenna is big because that's the frequency that FM is broadcast on, and it's still broadcast on that frequency. Just because there's so much equipment out there that is already oriented to that frequency. Same with AM. AM and FM, they were allocated frequencies, and then changing those frequencies is a problem. It's the same with the television frequency.
Yeah, that's a bit of an unfair comparison. It is, you know, what you're saying is accurate, but you're talking about something that's been established standard since the 1900s, since the invention of radio. These frequencies, because of the power levels that they use, and lower frequencies are much trickier than the higher ones as far as the harmonic relationships. People aren't going to understand what I'm saying, but when you have a fundamental frequency, the frequency that the device is operating at, it also produces energy at mathematical multiples of its root frequency. Let's use numbers like 10. If the transmitter is transmitting at 10, it also produces energy at 20. That's why CB radios, which broadcast at 27 megahertz, interfere with channel 2 on the old TVs, which was 54 megahertz. 27 times 2 is 54. So the radio producing energy at 27 megahertz for communications cannot help but produce energy at 54. Of course, it's an inversely proportional thing. As the harmonic increases, the power level drops. So it produces a much lesser amount of energy at the multiple of the root frequency, but it's still there, and it goes up to as high as the fifth overtone. Crystals are used at fifth, seventh, and even 11th overtones. Again, the transmitter scenario, the power gets ever smaller, but the problem there being that the frequencies mix, and it's a nightmare to keep things from interfering with each other. And after all these years of finally, getting things straightened out, that would be very, very difficult to change. Whereas at 850, you're already upwards of the commercial frequency band. The only thing above 850, you're now getting into scientific and military. Okay, they're up there. The military goes everywhere. But the great bulk of it, so harmonics are much less troublesome thing. That's my take on that, Barry.
Hey, Joe, can you hear me?
Yeah.
I don't want to get bogged down in the technicalities too much because I want to keep this on track with
let's go to Melanie. I think we've got enough electronics for today.
Yeah. So what I'd like to do is introduce Melanie. And now Melanie has this experience where she has completely had no knowledge of Ormus and no knowledge of electromagnetic fields. Is a complete newbie, I think it's really instructional for us to her experience as it progressed, and she started discovering all these things from complete not knowing to knowing a lot in a very short period of time, because of the situation that she was put in, the lessons that she's learned, and the things that we can take out of those lessons from someone who's got no previous experience and no extra guy in any particular way. And so, and when we first started hearing about Melanie, we were hearing them from Sigvirta, from some of the communications that Melanie was making to Sigvirta, and Sigvirta would post them as something like reports from Melanie or notes from Melanie, whatever it was. And so, you're right, you could, why don't you just take over and start telling this story from how it started for you.
Okay. All right, well, first of all, I thank everybody for being there because I feel this is sort of a dark subject for Ormus. And the fact that you're here means that you're accepting the challenge and you want to learn more and you want to take responsibility. This isn't the glamorous, fun side of Ormus. When I first discovered Ormus, it was this summer, and I was introduced to it by a man who was going to be a monk. And he was also just a wonderful scientist, and he was also very successful in business. So I had tremendous respect for him on every level. He was very grounded in business. He was very spiritual, and, you know, he was a fantastic scientist. So I walked into Ormus having complete confidence in what it could do for me. No questions whatsoever. It was just tremendous excitement that Ormus was introduced to me.
So he told you about Ormus?
Yeah, he told me about Ormus and kind of lectured me extensively on it and got me quite excited and confident about it. And he also had recommended Tibetan Gold because in his research he found this was a very good product. And so that's why I was buying from Sigvirta. So my first experience is I started off going into a tremendous detox. I was highly toxic. I've lived in Seoul since 1992, which is probably maybe the most toxic city on the planet for numerous reasons. And I went into a tremendous detox and went into this exhaustion, always completely exhausted. But I would feel extremely comfortable in meditation. It was the only place I could escape. My meditation was amazing, and I also felt wonderful swimming in the ocean. Then after the detox period passed, I then became what I felt was like superhuman. And I don't mean to be over the top, but that's exactly how I felt. I mean, everything I had in me that was positive became accentuated. And I also introduced Ormus to some office workers, and we were all working in the same office. And the same thing happened for them. We all became completely amazing, extremely intuitive, extremely creative, had great insight. For example, our office had graphics designers in it, and the graphics designers would make PowerPoint presentations for the strategic planning department. And usually the graphic designers just take the PowerPoint and just put in the images and the words that the strategic planners put in for them. But when they were taking Ormus, the PowerPoints would come to the graphic designers, and the designers would have tremendous insights for the company on strategic planning. And these were artists, these were designers, and their insights were so amazing that they started controlling the planning of the company. And I'm stating this because these are the kinds of things I saw, that we just became amazing, and we were all sort of superconducting off of each other. We had this wonderful synchronicity. So we were all elated and just so excited. And
didn't you say there was one woman who designed websites called Denise?
Yeah.
That suddenly you had never connected with, but suddenly you really connected with. How's that? What happened there?
Yeah, Denise and I had worked together for a few years, and we'd even lived together for a while, but we had no particular connection. And we almost became united. And it was really funny. One day Denise went to go get a root canal, and I was actually scared that I was going to feel her root canal. We became that connected.
Wow.
And we didn't have to talk.
Yeah.
And be inspiring to everybody, the final product. So we were just really elated about what we were going through and enjoying the adventure of our lives.
And so you relate that all to Ormus?
Oh, absolutely. And this is all in a matter of a short period of time. I mean, this just all started in August, and this was this wonderful stuff that was happening to us was happening right after the detox period in September.
How long did this go on for?
Well, we have, you know, this funny thing, this amazing period, as I call it, was maybe maximum of 2 weeks before we started also feeling, as our senses were heightened, we were getting a little shaky pretty soon after that, maybe within a week, around the electronics. And people could see we had heightened senses. We were extremely funny. People loved to be around us. But they were also sometimes wondering if we were on drugs. They would always ask us, what are you on? Because we were a bit like we were on cocaine, too, when we were in the office, because we were getting really shaky. If we walked outside, we were okay. But in the office with the electronics around us, we would just be really shaky and nervous. And so this made people a bit suspicious about this combination of characteristics they were seeing in us.
At this point, you had no idea about, you'd never heard of the electromagnetic frequencies and all that kind of stuff at that point?
No.
So therefore, you couldn't have had any expectation about it either?
No, I had no idea what it was. But we thought maybe just the Ormus was giving us so much energy that we were getting shaky.
Okay.
Soon after that, it became, yes, I know. So I went to Hong Kong, and when I was in Hong Kong, I met Sigverta, and I bought a sampling of every single product he made because I was quite interested in experimenting with it, including the red gold that we started off talking about at the beginning of the conversation. And when I met Sigverta in the hotel in Hong Kong, he walked in with his bag of lots and lots of Ormus, and we sat down in a restaurant, and he put the bag next to me at another chair. And we sat there for maybe 10 minutes, and I felt something absolutely overcome me, where I was raised into some sort of different state that I can't really even describe. And I want to say I was a bit spacey, but also an absolute state of bliss. And then I started asking him, what is this? What am I feeling? Do you feel it? And he said, yeah, I feel it. And I said, it's coming from that bag, isn't it? And he said, yeah, I really feel it. So the rest of the day, I walked around with this bag in a state of bliss in Hong Kong. And then I took the train to the airport on this enormous high. And when I walked into the airport, I started shaking like a leaf, just shaking like crazy. When I got on the plane, same thing happened. When I got back home, I brought the bag in the bedroom with me and slept with it and then went back into this sort of blissful state. My bedroom sort of always seemed to be a safe haven for me in terms of not being shaky. But at that point, I had no idea why when I walked in the airport I started shaking. I mean, I really just knew I was shaking in the airport, but I didn't know what it was about. And now I look back, and I'm guessing there are a lot of things going on in the airport, and I'd like to ask Joe about that later, that made me shake like a leaf in the airport.
And you're talking about electromagnetic frequencies in the airport?
I don't know. I still don't know.
I know they use a lot there for all manner of different purposes, and anyone who's been through airports knows that they have every kind of electronic tracking device, especially all the major airports, and Hong Kong is definitely one of the major global airports. And so
you have what they call glide slope indicators and path transmitters there that actually put out a beam of reference for the airplanes, and there's, I think, two or three. There's one for a left limit, one for a right limit. I'm not sure whether there's a center or not. But the two or three beams, the airplane literally can fly itself by following these beams. So for each runway, however many there are, and there's usually several at every airport, I'm sure you've seen these orange, they're painted like red lead, like the underside of a bridge used to be, antennas. They're like corner reflector FM antennas. And they put this beam out, and the plane literally follows the beam down because the planes are so complicated nowadays. They literally cannot be landed by the pilots. They have to be landed by computers. A 767 or an A380 or whatever they do now, I mean, it's just too much for even two people at the same time to land. Without the computer, you're sunk. So you've got that going on. You've got radar going on. You've got umpteen computers going on. You've got automatic doors, some of which operate in the 9 to 1200 megahertz range, and on and on and on. So you've got to see of it there, Melanie.
Well, you know, I don't know. Thank you for explaining that, because I have not been able to make any sense of why I completely lose it.
Not to mention all the comm radios.
Yeah.
And not to mention the x-rays and the
scanning and everything else going on for the luggage, right?
Yeah. Now, Melanie, one thing that we've found that you can actually convert Ormus to metal by exposing it to a magnetic field for a significant period of time. Don Nance has dried Ormus precipitate, seawater precipitate, out on an electric burner. And that Ormus will, over time, register as having more and more metal in it. More and more of the Ormus element as metal rather than as Ormus. Now, what we think is going on, imagine you've got an ice dancer, and she is spinning on the ice. And the way she goes into the spin is she swings her arms and then brings them up above her head. And when she brings them above her head, she goes into a much faster spin. Well, that is the high spin state that the Ormus, we think, goes into. It's along the long axis of spin, like the ice dancer. Now, if that ice dancer is spinning too fast, her arms will come out.
Centrifugal force. That's excellent.
Pull her arms out. And then those arms, now imagine that those arms are the electron valence funnels, as they're called, the electron connectors that connect atoms to other atoms. So when those arms go out, they're available to bond to other atoms again, and they're no longer monatomic or diatomic or whatever they are. They're no longer Ormus. Now they can drop to metal. And if the conditions are right, they will drop to metal. Now, when that happens, which is not as coherent, when you've got a bunch of atoms all spinning really fast in the same dimension, you've got this coherent communication system going on everywhere at once, between all of the people in the office, between you and everybody that you meet, between you and the Ormus in Sigverta's bag. But when the energy level gets too high, that coherence is damaged. And that may be what's happening at airports, in the office, and in other situations like that. People report that they like to take Ormus outside where they're grounded, and that seems to be beneficial in many ways for some people. Other people say that they, when they're around electronics or airports or whatever, that it is kind of jarring, like you say. Now, there's another factor going on here, too, and that is if your connection is increased by that coherent state, and somebody starts experiencing fear, that fear will spread throughout the whole group just as much as positive feeling would spread as well. So it's real important to realize your role, to pay attention to your role in listening to that fear or reinforcing that fear, because the Ormus doesn't care what signal it's carrying. It'll carry a signal of fear as easily as it'll carry a signal of connection.
Yeah, that's an important point, and I always was capable of getting control of fear through my meditation, but when the Ormus started changing me and in me, as you're describing actually what was probably happening, I completely lost my ability to connect with what I connected with before during meditation. So I lost my ability to control my fear. And it was the first time in my life that I hadn't been intuitive. As the Ormus was interacting with these EMFs, I had gone completely, I felt like a big metal shield went over my brain, and I couldn't connect anymore with what I would call the divine. So what Ormus originally heightened my ability to do, once I got into an EMF environment, I lost all of that.
So what's your status with Ormus now? Are you taking it? Are you
I'm taking it again, sometimes? Now
are
that I'm in a natural environment, and I'm having a wonderful experience.
You're no longer at the office?
No, I had to leave Seoul. So did some of the other people in the office who were taking Ormus. We had to just get the heck out of there.
Okay, so you're a Seoul survivor.
Well, sure, I feel we were lucky to get out. Let me just finish up with some of my experiences, and I really am appreciative of both of you guys sharing this with me because you're explaining so much to me as to what was happening, really. I forgot where I was. When I got back to Seoul, I told you I was kind of just absolutely fascinated by this bag of warmth that was taking me into this blissful state, and so I just decided to start carrying around my backpack. And I thought, well, if I bring it to the office with me, I'll keep it on my chair, and it'll help me work, and it'll help me be more creative, and help take away my pain. Because whenever I carried the bag around of Ormus, I lost all the pain in my back, and I have a bad back, and this Ormus would take it away. So my office probably was the most toxic office you can imagine, in that it was just full of computers, full of cell phones, full of every kind of electronic machinery that exists, plus there were no windows at all. So I don't know, this is something I'd be interested in finding out, is if EMS can escape. Like if you have an office with windows and lots of sun, can EMS get out? Or do they become self-contained in an office with no windows?
EMF can pass through pretty much any material except solid lead or any solid metallic screened copper, for example. You have to have a grounded shield, what they refer to as a Faraday cage, to contain most of it. When you get to a certain frequency, the wavelength is so small that it can actually pass in between the holes in the screening. For example, satellite dishes, the low-frequency satellite dishes, some of them cannot work on Ku-band because the higher-frequency satellite goes right through the dish because it passes through the holes in the screening or on the older dishes. They had to change satellite dishes. That's why the new ones that you see are solid instead of screening, because the frequency has gotten so high that it could actually pass through the individual holes in the screen, whereas lower frequency is stopped fairly effectively by screens. Pretty much metallic materials will stop it, lead being one of the most effective. An open window, it'll go right out through like it wasn't even there.
That's an interesting subject, Joe. I'd like to interject at this point and bring up this whole subject. Well, I thought of an illusion in the Ormus.
Could you repeat
network.
Yourself, Dennis? You
got beeped out.
You got beeped out.
Okay. I just wanted to bring up the subject of aluminium because it seems that some people have got this thought that just because something's in aluminium, it is shielded against any electromagnetic fields. And I remember when one person sent me some Ormus in aluminium, which is completely toxic when it arrives. And said, it's not possible because we send it out in aluminium bottles. And I'm saying, well, if aluminium is so effective, you know, why don't the X-ray technicians wear aluminium vests?
Well, it's very simple. Take a piece of aluminum and put a magnet on one side of it and a magnet on the other side and see if it passes through. You'll find that it will, of course, until you reach a certain thickness. One of the most effective materials at stopping magnetism is brass. Very thin brass will stop magnetism. It's also, of course, expensive and hard to come by. But you could certainly make a small brass container easily enough. But aluminum is not magnetically shielding as much as you would think. It does stop somewhat, but shielding, but not magnetic. Realize these are two different things. A moving electromagnetic field, a moving energy field, is different than a magnetic field. They're two different energies. And one precipitates the other and vice versa, but they are innately different.
There's another factor here, too, Dennis.
Yeah.
There's another factor here, too, and that is it looks like there are other subtle energies involved. Thin field energies would be one example, orgone energies and so on. As Danae Harding related on her conference call, and she's related to me in person, one thing that happened when they first started working with her technology to generate Ormus, to charge water, to energize water, and the Ormus in the water, was that the energies coming off would make a Geiger counter react. And that reacting Geiger counter, they could shield it in lead, and it wouldn't it wouldn't stop the energy. But when they finally decided to shield it in aluminum, it stopped very easily. So these were subtle energies that would really make a Geiger counter react, and yet they weren't stopped by lead, but they were stopped by aluminum. So
they're saying aluminum, as you call it, or aluminium, as I call it, has some usefulness.
It has some. It is a very effective shield for some energies that may be affecting the ormus. Perhaps
that'd be why it's used. Thank you for that. So, Melanie, why don't you talk some more about what happened when you got back to the office? Because you're carrying around this bag of all your ormus and making you feel good, and it just started making you feel worse and worse. At this point, my understanding of what you told me before is you had no idea there were even such things existed as electromagnetic fields. What started triggering this awareness that possibly you were affected by electromagnetic fields? What brought that on?
Well, I bring this bag of ormus to the office, and I guess the ormus must amplify the effects of the EMS. I don't. That's the only thing I can think. And at this point, I didn't know it. And all I know is that we were all shaking like crazy. Our eyes were watering. We'd lose the ability to breathe in the office. And after about...
Physically lose the ability to breathe?
Yeah, people were having... Well, people just started like... saying, well, I didn't. I felt myself gasping for air at times, but other people said they would lose their ability to breathe. That's what they would tell me that when they were in office. Now these were also people taking ormus with me in the office. They said they'd be gasping for breath in the office. So I guess the ormus somehow interacted with EMF. And at this point, again, we didn't know this. We didn't know what the heck we were going through. After about a week or so, I finally decided, hey, I better not bring this bag into the office because it seems like all this started when I was brought this bag in the office. Also, people started becoming violent, and a violent fight, and this does not happen in Korea, broke out in our office, a real violent fight where one person threw another person across the room. And frankly, he deserved it because he himself, the ormus was, I guess the ormus and the EMF were affecting him in such a way that he just started screaming at people all the time, yelling at everybody, couldn't control himself, and finally ended up being thrown across the room by a bodybuilder. He ended up spraining his ankle. So, and everybody was getting so nervous and shaky and crazy. One girl who was a triathlete, 30-year-old triathlete in amazing shape, this is Denise, the graphic designer, she ended up in the hospital because she was having a heart attack in the office.
Heart attack?
Well, that's the way she described it. She was having incredible heart palpitations, and she felt as if she was having a heart attack, and they had to rush her to the emergency room. And it's happened 3 times to her during this whole experience.
And when they go to the hospital, what was the result?
The hospital said there was absolutely nothing wrong with her heart. Now, also, the guy who was becoming very violent and got thrown across the room, he also ended up in the hospital with heart issues.
So how many people ended up with heart issues?
During this time, I don't know why I was so stupid, but I left Seoul to take a trip to Technology Central, which is Disney World. And I was doing a conference in Disney World. And I guess Disney World is absolutely teched out. That's all. I didn't know that till I got there. Well, like an idiot, because I was so addicted to this bag of ormus and had no idea what was going on and still didn't know what EMFs were, I thought, oh, well, I'll go home to Florida, and Disney World will be a lovely place. It's not like Seoul. I can take my bag there, you know, because I did have some connection that it may have to do something with the technology in Seoul, but Florida is a natural environment, so I thought I'll take my bag of ormus and I can get that blissful high again and everything will be beautiful. Well, I didn't realize, again, that Disney's probably more wired out than Seoul. And I went there, and I went there with my mother, and I had the bag of ormus in the room, and I was shaking worse than even Seoul all the time. I completely lost it at Disney with this bag. And finally, I ended up putting the bag of ormus in the hotel safe because I realized the same thing was going on. But then my mother, who doesn't take ormus and didn't even know I had a bag or didn't know anything was going on or that I was having any issues, started having heart problems at Disney World. And she also ended up going to the hospital for heart problems.
So she was close to the bag, and she has heart problems.
The bag was in the room, which she didn't know about, and I was in the room. she just suddenly started having heart problems at Disney World.
when the bag
I,
was...
Remember I told you this would be an amazing call? Well, you're hearing some amazing stuff here, and just it might take for a while for us to figure out on this list the implications of what Melanie's story, but this isn't the only time people have heart problems around you, yeah?
...was gone when the bag was not in your presence.
What?
When the bag was no longer in your presence, did people have the same result in these high EMF environments?
Well, that was the interesting thing. Finally, you know, when I took the bag out of the office, we Denise at this point we made a connection with the Ormus bag and Denise's heart issue. And we had a house cleaning, or an office cleaning Saturday, one day after the bag was out of the office. And I would go into areas of the room, and my heart would start beating really hard. And I would realize, oh, my gosh, this is the area of the room where the bag was, where I was keeping the bag. So I asked Denise, I said, Denise, I'm feeling something. When I go into certain areas of the room, my heart's beating. Now, I know the Ormus affected your heart. Are you comfortable enough to step into these areas of the room and see if you feel anything? And she would walk into these areas of the room and start having really bad heart palpitations, and we were stupid to experiment with it because it put her back in the hospital the next day. So the thing is, we realized that the bag seemed to have left a charge, and especially in the areas where it was sitting.
Jim, during his experience with Ormus, Jim, when he was working with some very, very high-energy Ormus that he made with ozone, he found that this Ormus would escape from its container and get into the gas tank of the truck that was also in the room with where he was working. It would get into the layers between the layers of a roll of plastic sheeting. And, in fact, he actually built a little Ormus exposure meter out of 6 microscope slides. And these microscope slides, what he did was he wrapped a rubber band around 6 microscope slides and put it in his pocket. And when those microscope slides became opaque so you couldn't see through them from all of the Ormus that had collected in between them, then he realized that that's the point he better quit being around it or he would start having some severe Ormus reaction, sort of like what you're describing.
Yeah. Well, go ahead.
So what we think was going on was that the Ormus is getting so revved up that it's becoming a communicator to the nth degree, and in that heavy-duty communication state, it reinforces everything you think, whether it's good or bad or whatever, and pretty much instantaneously. So you probably don't want that, because most of us aren't totally used to thinking only the things that we want. We alternate between things we want and things we don't want. So figuring out some way to shield the material so that it wouldn't get into the gas tank of the car and wouldn't get into the Ormus detector that Jim made, that became a very high priority for him. And so what he did then was he stored his Ormus inside of a steel file cabinet, put magnets on the outside of the file cabinet so that the Ormus wouldn't want to go past those magnets, so it would stay inside the file cabinet. And then he also put inside the file cabinet some desiccant beads that would collect
some what?
Some desiccant beads. These are used in the electronics industry to collect moisture out of the air so that it doesn't...
the same as the little packets that come in your vitamin pill jar.
There you go.
Yep.
Only these were aluminum oxide desiccant beads. These were the industrial form of them. And he would collect these aluminum oxide desiccant beads. He'd put a sealed bottle of them inside his container, his file cabinet. And over time, the indicator beads, which were blue with a fresh bottle, and after they'd been exposed to moisture, would turn red. These desiccant beads would turn red inside of a sealed bottle. So the Ormus was getting into the bottle and weighing down these desiccant beads and turning the indicators red. So
what I think I just heard, Barry, was the desiccant beads were inside a sealed bottle, and somehow they got filled up with moisture?
Yeah, yeah. And the moisture was Orman. Because one time, Jim took a magnet and moved it around underneath this bottle of desiccant beads and had me sniff it, and I got an enormous effect from it. And, I mean, he opened the bottle, but this was a bottle he'd already opened for another guy. This other guy was like a kickboxer, and in being a kickboxer, somebody come in at an angle and broken his leg, and he actually jammed the end of the bone into the ground. I mean, it's really a serious compound break. And the guy got bone cancer. They managed to patch the leg back together, but he got bone cancer, you know, in the bone marrow. And Jim gave him one whiff of this the same way, moved a magnet around under it while the guy put his head over the stuff. And one whiff, the guy, when he was walking back up the hill away from the shop where Jim was working, he had an out-of-body experience. He was watching himself walking up the hill. Then 2 weeks later, the guy called Jim and said, "My leg is really aching, like it feels like it felt when it was broken, this dull ache." And then a month later, he called Jim and said, "Guess what? I went to my doctor, because my partner, who was his partner, had noticed that he wasn't limping anymore on this leg." So he went to the doctor, was the oncologist, a cancer doctor, and the doctor said, "Let's take another x-ray." They x-rayed the leg, and there was no sign that it had ever been broken. There was no sign of bone cancer or anything. And this is from just one whiff of this stuff, this really energetic stuff inside the jar. So
Barry, what you're
idea.
Saying, I think I heard you say, that this desiccant was just completely full up, it had turned red, and to drive the ormus out of the bottle, he waved the magnet underneath the bottle, which is to drive the magnet north or top, you know, or up, out of the bottle, straight into your nostrils.
Just exactly like Michael Burberry did with his stuff. Yes.
Yeah. So the ormus would have moved away from the magnet into your nostrils.
Yes.
Now Melanie told me she had some kind of out-of-body experiences, too. What happened there?
Well, I mentioned that when I first started ormus, during the detox phase, in the initial days, my first experience with ormus was I couldn't seem to stay in my body. I was a little embarrassed to actually bring that up, but I would be walking and feel like I was above my body. So I had to work really hard to be able to continue to take ormus and stay in my body. But that was quite scary, you know, not knowing what was happening to me and why that was happening. But I've always had this bittersweet experience with ormus, in that I was experiencing these blissful, amazing states, but with various challenges, such as staying in my body or not being able to be in toxic environments.
Melanie, can I ask you a question? What material of Sikh Virtus was it that was the most potent material that affected you?
Red gold powder.
The red gold powder? Oh, thank you.
Yes, and that was one I had ordered several. I think I ordered three containers of red gold powder plus the liquid red gold, and those were all in this bag. And it wasn't the first time I had taken ormus to the office. I had been taking some of Sikh Virtus to the ormus previous to my trip to Hong Kong, but I went to Hong Kong actually to pick up some of this red gold, and it was when I had that everything.
I just want to say that with practice and in the right environment, an out-of-body experience is exhilarating and wonderful.
Yeah, I'm wondering what the complaint's about myself. I'm jealous.
Well, it's just that I wasn't prepared for it. I didn't seek it. I've never been interested in that, in having out-of-body experiences.
Well, that's where the ormus takes you.
Huh?
That, in my opinion, that's where ormus takes a person.
Well, I think now I'll be able to work with that more.
What did you anticipate ormus was going to do to you before you started taking it?
I anticipated that I would have wonderful health benefits, that it would deepen my meditation, it would deepen my yoga practice, all the wonderful things that it did do to me. It met my expectations beyond my expectations.
But yet you had the negative take on the out-of-body. I'm just kind of trying to understand that.
Again, out-of-body experience was never anything I wanted in my practice. I wanted to have a deep connection with the divine, but I didn't necessarily want to leave my body at this point in my practice. So
I think you're pursuing a mutually exclusive goal there. I mean, that's the deal. I mean, the part of us that you're trying to build does not need our body. It exists outside of our body. And the whole purpose behind your meditation and your work is to build the etheric body, the non-physical. And that's precisely what Orvis is about. So that body, you need to really stay clear of it, because it's going to do that.
You're sharing this with me, because I haven't really accepted that in my practice. And I think that out-of-body experiences were also discouraged by my yoga teachers. So maybe I had some fear involved. So I'm glad you're sharing this with me, and I'm going to work on it.
Well, let me suggest you. This is Thomas of Cherokee Gold here, and let me suggest you pick up a book by Robert Monroe. Hey there. I came late, but Robert Monroe wrote a series of books, and it's called Journeys Out of My Body. And it really provides a kind of roadmap so that perhaps you can get familiar with it. It sounds like there are two energetic bodies, and the one that you're having where you walk above yourself, but you're still within, you know, the things you would call the physical world, is your first energetic body. But when you actually travel to other realms where, for example, people describe a tunnel of light with friends and loved ones on the other side when they die and cross over, you can travel there if you'd like. It's you know, in Monroe Institute speak, that's Focus 27. And that's what I mean, is there are programs where you can acquire those skills. And oddly enough, the effect of the Monroe binaural beat is identical to that of Ormus on the brain. It causes coherence of the hemisphere. Should is not a good word to use, but I would encourage you to see it as an opportunity, and to see it as a way of acquiring the skills that you might need when you get out of your body. Because I would agree with Joe, this is about spiritualizing your physical body. You might be taking your physical body with you this time. Who knows? I think it'll be very different for us this time.
Tom, I'm glad you interjected, because actually your website was some of my therapeutic support when I was going through all this by myself. I used to print out every page on your website and read it, so it's exciting that I'm now talking to you and hearing from you. And thank you for sharing that with me. I'll send you an email.
I have a friend who runs a website called vesica.org. And he uses biogeometry, and just by it's not a right angle. It's he sells L stickers, EL stickers, and they're in the shape of an L, and they're very effective in blocking EM forces. And I agree that grounding is a very important part. If I take a lot of Ormus and I don't take the time to ground myself, I begin to have spontaneous out-of-body experiences, like standing in line at the Walmart, which is not where I want to have them.
No, that's not the ideal place, is it?
So, I mean, you can control that. And the other thing is that encircle yourself with some sort of protection, consciously.
I do want to mention, when I started having all these out-of-body experiences, I was luckily on a yacht traveling the island hopping around Thailand. So I was actually in a better environment than the line at the Walmart. But luckily, as I would be having all these body distortions, as I may call them, due to lack of understanding, these out-of-body experiences and not understanding my body, that was another part of this whole experience. When I was having all these out-of-body experiences, My body didn't make sense to me anymore. I would touch my body and didn't understand why it was there. Like, what's this finger? This is weird. What's this skin? This is not me. What the heck's this doing around me? So I was completely confused by this body I lived with for 40 years and why it was there. And the only way I could seem to just get out of that weird state of not understanding my body was to jump in the ocean and go snorkeling and hang out with the fish and swim with the fish. And then that was the weird thing, is that the fish and I, we would swim. I'd swim among schools of fish, and we all sort of synchronized together.
A fishy story.
Yeah. But that would actually, I'd get out of the ocean, and I would be able to feel a lot of healing and a lot of grounding.
Yeah, that's very grounding.
Yeah.
Well, Melanie, you're an explorer. We're all explorers with this. We're all learning how this stuff works. The thing that's most important, I think, to keep in mind is that nothing can happen to you that you aren't tuned into. So if you don't want to have some experience, thinking about it isn't the best way to not have it. The best way to not have experiences is to think about something else.
Yeah, replace
to focus
it with
somewhere else. That's what grounding does. That's what swimming in the ocean does. All of those things that you've described, they're pulling your attention away from the things you don't want. And it's real important to learn to distinguish between what you want and what you don't want and what you're thinking that triggers thoughts about what you don't want or what you do want. That's what Orma seems to help do most of all for me, is it makes it more evident that thinking of things that I want or I'm thinking of things that I don't want, things that don't feel good, and tunes me into those feelings of, hey, this doesn't feel good. So that's my guidance system.
Thus spake Barry Carter, master theosophist and metaphysician.
Hello.
That is gone flat. Still there? Hello?
Well, it wasn't that profound. Come on.
Well, I just thought everyone had just bailed off the call, but you got cut up or something.
Barry, I would like to ask you a question about that. During these experiences, your website also became therapeutic to me, and I read you post things exactly like what you're sharing with me now. And I really worked with that, with the concepts you're sharing with me now. And it was very good. Meditation was an area for me to change my thinking, because when I would start to get really, really negative, I would see the whole office would become highly destructive in a scary place. So I realized I had to take control of my thoughts, and I would just go away and I would meditate for an hour during a lunch hour. I'd even go to the bathroom and meditate to get control of my thoughts. And I thank you for that, because I learned that from your website. But then it got to a point where, as I say, with so much, I guess the electronics in the environment, I'm just guessing, it was like a metal shield came over my head, and I couldn't meditate or connect anymore. And this made me start to feel like, and this was at the point, I think this was 4 weeks into this whole bad period and when things were falling apart. I think it was Sharon Rose that brought it to my attention. There are two things that could potentially make Ormus toxic to your body, and that would be one, sulfides, and the other, EMFs. And that's when the whole EMF thing, and I didn't know what an EMF was, and I had to go look it up and research what an EMF was, and I feel real stupid about that now, but then it all made sense. Of course, we're all experiences. We're in the EMF mecca in the soul. I mean, you can't get away from it anywhere. Soul is, Koreans are very proud that Korea is the most connected country on earth, most wired country on earth. And they make most of the world's cell phones. So anyway, I started feeling when I lost, you know, I've been meditating for a long time, and I was very serious about my practice, and I was very intuitive. And then I started to feel this, like I said, it was like a metal plate going over my head, and I couldn't connect anymore.
I had operated as an intuitive my whole life and my work and my life, and I couldn't, I had no intuition and couldn't meditate. And I was feeling, my God, it's like a conspiracy or something. Well, whoever's making these frequencies, they're cutting us off from the divine. I mean, as I was becoming very elevated in my practice through Ormus, I was immediately cut off, and it was like something, I guess you can, with radio signals, can't you disturb somebody's radio signals? Like in wartime, can you go in and do something to distort the radio signals?
Yeah.
Right. Why are they called Boston signals or something? What is that, the technical term for that?
Jamming.
Jamming the signals. That's exactly what I was experiencing. It was like somebody was stepping in and jamming the signals. And when I was around cell phones or computers, the signals were all jammed, and I couldn't connect anymore.
Mm-hmm. Well, if it doesn't feel good, don't do it.
Can I ask a quick question? This is Tom Waters from California.
Mm-hmm.
Can you bury it in the ground? Like if I dug a hole and buried the Ormus in the ground and then covered it with like maybe a foot of dirt, would that in fact insulate it from these influences?
It seems to insulate it, and it seems to energize it in some way.
Yeah, it would be an excellent idea.
Thank you.
Yep, I'd buy that.
Thank you, guys.
Kevin in Australia has tested a bit of that by burying water, and it seems to energize the Ormus in it again. He's not absolutely sure about it, but there seems to be indicators that that's happening. And, you know, that's one of the ways that they charge the biodynamic materials in biodynamic farming, is they'll bury them in a cow's horn, a conical showbread-shaped thing for several months, and then they'll use that biodynamic preparation, stir it, spin it, get it in spin coherence into a bunch of water, and water their plants with it, and it has energetic effects.
This brings up the question that I have as an Ormus user is, could you all make some suggestions on safe places to store the Ormus now that most of our homes are getting wired with all these electronics? I guess one would be to bury it underground.
What about a safe?
Yeah, safe. Yeah, would that be?
Really, a safe.
Yeah.
I store mine in my microwave, and I don't use my microwe because it's a Faraday cage.
There you go.
Yeah, that's a good idea. The basement, if you're lucky enough to have one, is also a good idea.
Yeah. And another thing, I've got an old galvanized garbage can out in my greenhouse that I store the samples that I've had around for 10 years or more. And they seem to be doing just fine out there. I also, those samples that I most value, I put them inside a steel can. Sometimes of the year, they sell popcorn in these gallons.
Decorative tins, I think they call them.
Decorative tins. And you can also get these tins in multiple sizes, starting from small to large. And one way, when I was shipping Ormus overseas, some very energetic Ormus that Jim made, we put it in nested tins that we wrap first a tin, then paper or plastic, then aluminum foil, then another steel can, and then plastic, aluminum foil, another steel can. We do that with four or five layers.
Just like Joe Lello was describing.
That sounds killer, Barry.
Oh, yeah, and it worked pretty good. Nevertheless, sometimes it would arrive and there would be more metal in it than there was when it left, when it was assayed. So,
see, let me just throw something at you. That's where the steel part bothers me. I know a lot of people use steel, and steel, when it's in the presence of a magnetic field, conducts the magnetic field.
Yeah.
So, I mean, while it does stop it to some degree, it's really the worst for stopping pure magnetism. It's great for stopping EMF and radio waves and so forth, but I mean, it almost attracts magnetism. That's what I could never understand about using a metal can.
Well, it's Mu metal is steel is part of Mu metal.
The most magnetic metal in the world is Mu metal. I have a piece in front of me.
It's also used as magnetic shielding.
Yeah.
How about inside a refrigerator as the compressors?
It seems to work pretty well. I don't know why. But
the refrigerator actually, puts out EMFs, right?
Well, it's
your motor is encased in steel, which keeps the magnetic field down somewhat. There's no openings, whereas almost every other motor has openings. But I wouldn't recommend putting it in a refrigerator myself. Much better is the dead microwave in the basement, in my opinion.
That's probably better.
Yeah, I love that idea.
I do, too. That's awesome.
Is it possible to encourage Ormus distributors to make these suggestions when they ship out their products to customers about various ways of storing it so that the Ormus becomes safe?
I know Melanie talked to me quite a bit about that. She said, why don't Ormus producers send their stuff out protected and then send out directions on how to keep their Ormus safe?
We pretty much assume that our customers are up on this stuff because they find out about us through the groups mainly, and maybe that's not the case. I mean, I guess people are now starting to register their sites and so forth. I never registered my site with the search engine. I don't want people just wandering in out of nowhere finding my site. This isn't about money. I'm not trying to sell as much Ormus as I can. I want people to come about me through the intelligent road and understand what it is they're buying before they buy it. And I always assume that people have read and already understood this. That's why I don't bother with the instructions.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, when I first started taking Ormus, I was probably researching on it at least 4 hours a day because I was absolutely fascinated by the subject. And I didn't come across much about, if anything, about storage, or that would have triggered something right away. Now, maybe I was researching the wrong thing.
Well, that's one thing that I've posted some about storage.
It hasn't been covered heavily. She's right, Barry.
But
it comes up
mostly it was covered in the forums, and that's archives in the forums, and all of those archives aren't necessarily easily available. So you're right. We need to put some easily accessible storage page up so that these issues are addressed. Yes.
And then the other thing I would like to ask distributors to do, based on our experience, is when they send the Ormus out, of course they send it out protected and instructions for taking care of it, but is there anything a customer can do to make sure that when they receive their Ormus it's not toxic before they start taking it? Because if it's flying, you know, we're hearing now more about airports and what's happening from Joe, so it seems that the customer should be able to know how they could test the Ormus for toxicity and possibly what can they do about it if it arrives toxic.
You know, toxic is a strong word. I mean, there's going to be, in a worst-case scenario, trace amounts of this material in there that's turned to metal. There's no easy way to detect it. Unfortunately, you would have to have it chemically analyzed. If you took some of it and sent it to a standard 104-element chemical analysis done, that would tell you if there were any of the toxic metal forms present. Ormus would not show up, obviously, because it doesn't show up on that kind of a test. But if any of the rhodium or iridium, for example, had despun back into toxic metal form, it might show up, and if there's such trace amounts, it would be below the level to be detected. But if there was enough to cause you any harm, it would. Personally, I don't think it's that big a problem.
Yeah, because I don't think so either, Joe. I mean, I store my Ormus with what it came in, the aluminum foil, how you package it, and how tall.
Yeah, you never know. Somebody might accidentally set a package. Yeah, that's a point. Somebody could set a package on top of a power transformer. Well, while the mailman's having lunch and you're the next house, he's got it sitting on top of a 50-kilowatt power transformer that's outside the apartment building. I mean, that is a possibility. That's scary.
What's really fascinating here is hosted on the list under the title of something, A Cry for Help from Melanie, where she was experiencing where she would have residual toxicity that she associated with electromagnetic frequencies that had basically come right through her bags and clothing, and any time she wore those kind of clothing or picked up those kind of bags, she got the shakes just like she was standing next to a wireless transmitter. Tell us about that, Mel.
I tell about it with a bit of a hesitation, just because a lot of people just can't believe that materials could absorb the frequencies, and I certainly couldn't believe it and question my own sanity, as did the people around me. But I'm going to be brave and talk about it. And assume you're all open to it, the concept. But I started, again, I was becoming more and more sensitive, and you probably wonder, why the heck did you keep taking Ormus? And I would quit taking it, and then I'd go back because I did enjoy the good part of it. And as I would continue to take Ormus, I continued to, my sensitivity would increase and increase and increase. And it got to the point where I couldn't, say I had taken a bag back and forth to the office every day, which was highly toxic. I would go out of the environment with that bag, and I would, it would just make me shake like crazy. Or clothes that maybe I had, my gym clothes that I would store in the office. If I would go out somewhere else and put them on, they'd make me shake like crazy. Yeah, and this even started happening with food that would stay in the refrigerator for a really long time. I would eat some food and start shaking and kind of get debilitated, and I would say, oh, yeah, this has been in the fridge. Wow,
Jim,
I wonder if the fridge is putting in something.
Jim noticed when he first got exposed to this that his sweat started having lots of Ormus in it, and he didn't know that it was Ormus, but he would sweat, and he would wear, he preferred acrylic sweaters because they would absorb this sweat and get it away from his skin. And however, one time he brushed past a picture frame that was plated with metal, plated with gold, actually. It was a gold plated picture frame, gold leaf picture frame, and it dissolved the gold, his sweat, from the sweater. And when he took the sweater, he had to move back into his mom's house because he was having so much trouble staying awake and staying functional. He moved back into his parents' house. His mom wouldn't wash his clothes because when she'd handle this stuff, she'd have hallucinations or out-of-body experiences, and she was a good Christian woman, and this wasn't acceptable. And so, you know, his dad was a minister, you know, and other things, visions and things like that. And Jim didn't like any of those things, didn't want any of those things to happen, and they scared him as well. So he started buying sweaters at Goodwill, you know, at used clothing store, and he'd wear them until they got saturated with this stuff, and he'd throw them away.
Intimable.
So this is something that's happened to other people in other circumstances. This stuff will accumulate in your sweater. Now, whatever thoughts and so on are being carried by this stuff, those can be reinforced by wearing the sweater, being around the sweater, I would imagine as well.
Any minutes to persuade Melanie to throw away some of her clothes and bags?
Yeah, I've had to get rid of a lot of things. You know, that's interesting because it seems that the most toxic bags that I had were the bags I used to carry my Ormus and my cell phone in. And all of those items that were in those bags would just, if I touch them even now, they make me shake like crazy. So it seems to be that the Ormus with the cell phone in a bag, it makes everything, changes the frequency of everything in the bag. And
yeah.
and this bag, you know, I got rid of these things I can't get rid of, like my passport, my driver's license. Mm-hmm. But if I still touch any of those things, I just shake like crazy. So I'm realizing, now this is something I hope somebody can explain, is how could an electromagnetic field change the fibers of material and even, you know, solid things like my passport, which I guess is
for Jim, what it was doing
paper.
was driving the Ormus out of his body and into the fibers. Anything that's a tight place, Ormus likes to hang out in tight places. That's why in magnetic traps we put oil-absorbing fabric, because that oil provides all these tight places. That's why Jim put the microscope slides in his pocket, because that's a tight place between those microscope slides. Ormus likes to get into tight places because it seems that even more than not moving in magnetic fields, I mean, even more than not being around magnetic fields, it doesn't like to move in magnetic fields. So if it can get into a tight place where it's quiet, where it doesn't have to move in a magnetic field, then it does even better.
And do the frequencies also get into tight places?
Frequencies do?
A frequency can't be stored. A frequency is a moving thing, and when once it's the source is shut off, the field stops. I mean, frequencies don't hang around. They cause their effect, and that's it. They're gone. You can't store a frequency.
But does it change the structure?
That's not exactly true, because homeopathy is storing the frequency or the resonance.
Yeah, but that's a whole different ballgame of frequency there. I'm talking about electromagnetic frequencies.
Well,
those frequencies of homeopathy are way, way different from electromagnetic frequencies.
There are actually homeopathic remedies that are made by frequencies, electromagnetic frequencies, being broadcast into water. They've been able to replicate the frequencies of various homeopathic resonances and put them into water. And there's quite a bit of work that's been done on
it. If there were indeed an electromagnetic field in that water, then you should be able to bring it by any classical detection device. A meter, an amplifier would be the easiest thing. You should be able to take that homeopathic bottle and put it to the input of your guitar amplifier and get a hum off of it or some reaction.
Well, that
I'd have to... Yeah, I don't know.
The way it works is that it seems to resonate the water molecules.
That I will buy.
Cause
the principle of right therapy.
Shape. In other words, the water molecule will go from an icosahedral shape to a dodecahedral shape, or a closed icosahedral to an open icosahedral shape.
Dodecahedral to me, mate.
Yeah.
Cymatic.
Yeah, like cymatic. You put a different frequency.
We've only got about 20 minutes that we can take questions, and we haven't asked a single question yet. And this has been so fascinating. I knew this conversation would be absolutely fascinating, and it's even taken up more time than I expected. So let's throw the door open for some questions, because guaranteed there's going to be people here have been really polite so far, except for one person who just had to ask this question. Let's hear from some people in the room, because I guarantee there's going to be people going, what about this and what about that? Yeah? So you want to speak up. If you're on mute, hit *7. Speak up. Tell us who you are, where you're from, and what your question is.
Or salt down in the salt or sand?
That's another
thing. Question in a way that's complete, because the question isn't complete in the way you've asked it.
Well, I can answer that. You can store ormus. Jim would also put salt in his storage unit. And he says that the salt, putting it inside salt or putting salt in with it, somehow protected it. Now, I don't know how that worked. Salt water seems to be less susceptible to magnetic fields as well. There must be some shielding effect of the salt water molecule versus the other water molecule. The theory is
you can take
that
a crystal.
Crystals may work as well. We don't know.
I was saying you can take a crystal and put it down in salt and it'll clear it.
Uh-huh, exactly. And this may be a way to clear your passport, Melanie, by hanging it out with some crystals or putting it in some salt.
Rubbing it down with salt.
That's
an old-time remedy for removing the effects of negative frequencies that have impinged upon things. You rub it down with salt or spray it with salt solution. You wouldn't want to get your passport wet. So take some coarse sea salt and rub all the pages and the cover and everything real good and shake it loose.
That's why they call it sea salt, because it ceases and halts those frequencies.
I love it.
Specifically sea salt, or is there a...
Well, any salt will do it, but sea salt is a good choice.
Okay.
Yeah. I wouldn't.
And you can use citrine, which is a self-clearing crystal.
Yeah.
Oh.
It's very good for that.
Hey, what a great question. Thank you for that. Anyone else got any great questions? Or even just questions?
What about selenite?
Selenite's very good as well.
Now,
I didn't even know what selenite is.
One woman who I worked with was a crystal expert. She did a lot of work with crystals, and she would wash her crystals with trap water, and she said that that even though information was imprinted on the crystal, that once you washed it with the trap water, that information was gone. Now,
it does clear them.
Does it?
It does.
Yeah, no, if I want to clear my crystals, I just put them in salt water and stick them out in the sun.
I heard an awful lot of beeps. There's got to be a lot of people out there. No questions?
Sometimes when there's an enormous amount of information like this, people sort of go into overload, and they're just...
We have somebody there. Wait, that's somebody. Who's that?
Chuck.
Speak up, Chuck.
Speak a little louder, Chuck. We can barely hear you.
I just want to say thank you, Joe, for all you've done for us, and you did a good job. So.
Oh, that Chuck. Okay. Thank you, Chuck.
I have a question. Can you please tell us again how to wrap the ormus? Like, what's on the outside? Is it
okay, sure. Take these three materials is aluminum foil, sheet plastic like your saran wrap, and paper like you use in your printer, copy, Xerox copy paper. You lay down the foil. That's going to be your outermost layer. Then the plastic, and then the paper, another layer of foil, plastic, and paper. Now you put your bottle down at one end of it and grab all the sheets together and just roll it up. And while you're grabbing it around the girth of the bottle, you can twist the ends like you would a Tootsie Roll.
So it's sort of like a couple layers.
You wind up with many multiple layers. You've got a double layer, and then however long your pieces are that you lay out there, it's going around each time, so you can wind up with quite a few layers on there.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
I ship wrapped in plastic jugs, wrapped with a layer of paper, and then wrapped with aluminum foil. It's just a single layer, but
miles above other people that do nothing. That's great.
Oh, well, I've shipped it as far as Australia, and it seems to be okay when it gets there.
It arrived here in good shape, Thomas. Anyone have a last question? Seize your moment, buddy.
Hey, I have another answer.
Oh, great.
Jim first noticed this phenomena of responsiveness to magnetic fields when he was taking some ormus that he'd made from metal using ozone, driving it from Portland, Oregon to Baker City. And every time he got into the area where these high-tension wires from the dam were going across the highway, the high-energy electromagnetic field.
Where was this?
On the way between Baker City and Portland, from East Oregon to Portland. Every time he went through this area, this ormus would get out, and he'd breathe it and get really buzzed from it, and he didn't like that a bit. So he decided that he had to wrap it up in foil and wrap it up in metal in order to provide some kind of a Mu metal shield for the foil and for the ormus. And that was how he first devised the idea of shielding it, and that was where the idea first came from.
And that stuff is not cheap.
Interesting that schizophrenics wrap themselves in tin foil as well.
Really? Let me go get some.
They say it protects you from cosmic waves.
I knew they wear hats frequently. I didn't realize they did the entire body wrap.
Hi, this is Ed in Southern California. I've got a question about, I've been taking ormus for a while now, and listening to the call here, I've also realized I've been drinking water that I keep on a high-powered magnet. So drinking this magnetic water, wouldn't that be negating the ormus effect of the ormus I've been taking?
I heard a woman in the background there. Don't go away. We heard you, too. Barry, you want to grab that one?
Not necessarily. The magnetic field first energize it, and that energized ormus can be more effective in the body than the ormus that hasn't been energized. That's That's the principle behind the magnetic traps, the principle behind Bolong's magnetic shakers and magnetic bubblers. It's the principle behind the Volixer.
Everything in moderation, so long as you don't overdo it.
Exactly.
You I wouldn't store it on the magnet. But...
No, I wouldn't store it on magnets.
Right, I keep the Oramus separate from the magnets, but the magnetic charged water is not going to harm the effect of the Oramus in my body?
No. We had another woman with a question there?
It's actually me, Melanie, again. Can I ask a question? It's about water. It's connected with the – I'm kind of piggybacking the last question. Is that okay?
Yeah.
All right, here's my question is I thank Barry for kind of talking about homeopathy and how it affects water because that in my sensitivity, I could not find water I could drink anymore because it seems like everywhere in Seoul, everybody's got a water jug and a place with a Wi-Fi, both at home, at office, my environment. And I could
repeat
so
that.
Then I started not to – huh?
Repeat that. You got beeped out.
What I was saying is if I started having a crisis and then I couldn't find water that was stored in a safe environment. So I actually just started drinking, you know, I go out and find oranges in the sun or coconuts in the sun and get the liquid from that because I couldn't find water anymore. So then I became kind of curious is how can I change the water? If the water has picked up a frequency or something, if the water has been changed by these frequencies, and I absolutely know intuitively it had, because as soon as I would drink it, it about knocked me over and put me in a bad state. So how, I was wondering, can I clear the water? Can I clear these frequencies?
Dr. John Maluski, who was going to be on this call, but had...
And we're going to have the first week in January, we're going to have Dr. John.
Dr. Maluski took magnetite, and basically he'd drag a magnet down through a dry wash in Arroyo in Albuquerque or near Albuquerque, New Mexico, and he'd take the magnetite that this was picked up by this, and Thomas has done some of this as well in wetter climates in Georgia, and he would pick this magnetite up and put it in a bucket, and then store his water inside an inner bucket, inside that larger bucket. And this has worked very well. He was able to grow a 9-foot-tall geranium by watering it with this magnetite water. Now, magnetite isn't magnetic per se. It is attracted to a magnet, but it doesn't necessarily magnetize itself always. Some portions of it will magnetize, but some portions will not. And that magnetite seems to have other minerals that restructure the water and eliminate certain toxic residues in it. Vinny Pinto, who was a previous guest on this conversation, has done a lot of experiments with that as well. So that would be one of the easier ways to do it. Put your water inside of a magnetic bucket. Another thing
is
there's
a magnetic bucket.
Yeah, a bucket with magnetite around it.
So-called meow kettle.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right.
Tight enhanced Oramus water.
Mm-hmm.
Can I talk 2 cents words in here?
Yeah.
Hello? Can people hear me?
Yes.
Speak up.
Hi. The only thing that I know about most waters is if you put...
Who is this, by the way?
Hello?
Who is this?
Hello? Hi, this is Anna.
Hi, Anna.
Hi. The only thing that I know, because I've been selling distilled water systems, if you put a precipitator into most waters, and this includes well water and spring water, you will get dissolved metal particles that will precipitate out of that water. If you put an electrical charge, like through a precipitator, electrodes, into distilled water, you can put your finger into that water without getting any electrical voltage at all.
Right.
So what I'm suspecting is that there may be something is picking up on those dissolved metal particles that are within most water.
There's no dissolved metal in my water. It's from a spring.
She brought up a good point, though, Melanie. Have you tried distilled water?
Distilled water is the only pure water you can get.
You can You can also use Emoto's energetics to energize your water and purify it. He cleared a toxic spring with it.
Good point.
Spraying with it?
Yeah. Emoto went to completely toxic water sources and springs and so on, and he just...
Fujiwara...
Say again, Thomas?
Oh, it was the Fujiwara Dam, and it was totally polluted, and he, with prayer and intention and using words, projected all this energy into the reservoir. I'm sure you've seen his work on snowflakes. It was in the movie What the Bleep Do We Know, and he found love and gratitude and forgiveness and healing to be very powerful and change the character of the water.
How was this water toxic? With what kind of pollutants?
Well, I don't know specifically. He has
probably
a,
you name it.
There's a link to his website on my links page,
okay.
And his messages of water from water is his book,
mm-hmm.
Which is available both in print and on tape. It's very interesting. But you can change the structure of water just by beaming into it. There are dowsers, for example. If you have a community around you, oftentimes there are dowsers. And dowsers can help you do exactly that. They're very good with water. A lot of it is your belief in yourself. And there will come a time, believe it or not, you won't be the least bit sensitive to EMF. Because you won't have enough substance a physical substance to react to it. You let it pass through you. You know, masters walk through walls because walls are 99.999% space.
Well, thank you for that.
Not enough nines there, buddy.
Well, I'm the mystic of the group. I talk about out of body and mystic experiences and stuff like that when I'm the conference call.
Melanie, do you know how to do an Emoto thing to your water?
Again, Joe?
I said, Melanie, do you know how to make an Emoto imprinter for your water?
No, I would try to hold the water and think positive, you know, think loving.
No, I mean a physical device. Ron Talmadge used to use this when he was making up any of his elixirs and pharmaceuticals that he made. He took a piece of rainbow-colored paper, which I guess you can get at a stationery store, and he used a small script font on a printer, and he just had it print over and over every positive word he could think of. Peace, love, bliss, happiness, forgiveness, and just over and over, hundreds and hundreds of times on a sheet of paper that was just literally a rainbow. And then he would take this and wrap it around the jug that the particular process was going on. I have a piece of this around a Sun tea jug, you know, the gallon jugs with the little spigot on it. And I have my magnesium prills in one, and another one I have my... just regular drinking water in, and this will put the message energy into the water, and it's very, very simple to do. You just print out a sheet and put the word side in facing the water and scotch tape it on there, and you got it.
Well, easier than that, take a magic marker and just
write
love.
You can put it on your printer and then put it through a laminator so it's completely sealed up and put it actually inside the big water container.
Take a magic marker and write love, gratitude, peace on the outside of your bottle.
So there's several different ideas for you.
Thank you.
Now listen, we're winding up for time, and it feels like we could go for another hour easily, but I'm just not going to do it because I want to go somewhere else.
Makes sense to me.
Go feed your wallaby.
And I knew we were probably not going to have enough time. Of course I was right.
Well, let's do this again sometime then.
Yeah, thanks everybody for listening to my gravelly voice, and it was great.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Really, really appreciated the call. And listen, thank you so much for joining us on this call. And as usual, there's always a big download of energy that comes through these calls. And so I want to thank you so much for joining us, even if you didn't speak up, even if you just, you know, listened to it all and soaked it all up. And I know Joe Lelo is going to email to the list.
I have already done so. It's on the list.
Fantastic.
Thanks a lot, everybody.
And what
Happy
I
holidays.
Say is this, that for those commercial alchemists who don't send out their ormus wrapped in these kind of protections, they're in the last millennium now. And what's really interesting is that I sent some. I knew Melanie was having these problems, and so I sent her some ormus wrapped at all times, because clearly she was in an environment where somehow the ormus was getting affected by these extraordinary electromagnetic fields, and so she was able to take my ormus, and it wasn't toxic to her, but it did increase her sensitivity. Isn't that right, Melanie?
Yeah, absolutely.
Melanie,
Dennis,
I just wanted to say
Dennis,
my
that
three...
isn't exactly completely true, because there is some ormus that is much more resistant to the magnetic field. For example, salt causes... Jim would put extra salt in his stuff, and it was very hard to get it to go out. David Hudson even talked about salt being used as a keeper to keep the ormus from going out with the rest of the stuff.
So does Don Nance.
Exactly.
And so I usually send, if I'm going to send ormus out, I keep it in its original salty condition. I don't even wash it.
Very good.
So listen, I'm going to wind this baby up, and I want to thank you all so much for being on this call. It was great fun, as it usually is. And our next guest... on our mid-month call, and I haven't even spoken to him personally yet, we've got the thing lined up through his secretary, is David Wolfe. You know the raw foods guru? And he's the one who's been talking on YouTube about ormus and foods.
Oh, yeah.
So, we've got him lined up in 2 weeks' time for the December mid-month call, and I know that's going to be a fascinating call.
Very good.
So I invite you to get everyone you know onto this call, because it will be fascinating. It's going to be like a crossover between the raw foods movement and the whole ormus movement, and I think this will be a great call to get people on, because I think this will be fascinating.
Good. Might have a good new influx of people. Very good, Dennis. We appreciate your efforts too, man. Thank you very much for conducting this. And I'm going to go ahead and check out. Bye-bye, all.
Hi.
Dennis?
Bye-bye.
Barry?
Hi, everybody.
Dennis, are you still there?
No, I've hung up.
It's Arlene. I missed the call. I've been sick all day, so.
Oh.
Bad girl, Arlene. Stop getting
yeah,
sick.
Yeah, I just went to check my email and realized that there was a conference today. But
It's good to hear your voice anyway.
Yeah, my voice is not up to... But anyway, well, I'll be looking for the...
we're going to be sending the call to you because you're an annual benefactor.
Yeah.
So you're going to get the call in your own leisure.
Yeah.
Hi, sweetie. So, goodbye.
Hello and goodbye to everybody.
Okay.
All right. Thank have a good day, evening, everybody.
I'm checking now. Good morning to you.
Dennis.
All right. So long.
Wait, Dennis, before you go, when is John Maluski going to be on?
In the first weekend, the first Saturday in January.
Terrific. His site is just
for that date too. I think it might be the 4th or whatever it is. I can't remember. The first Saturday in January.
Terrific. Look forward to it. Best of luck.
Okay.
Cheers.
See you soon. Bye now.